I think footwear is just one of those difficult places because of the actual business perspective. It's actually just a terrible, terrible base to begin with because of SKUs and variants due to sizing. What other product are you producing that might start with 13 to 15 variants? And then if you add widths, then you're into like 100 variants for one product.
Cast. Welcome, good people who love shoes and possess ears, to the Stitch Down Shoecast, where we talk quality footwear, how it's made, and all the things we love about it. I'm Ben from StitchDown.com. Ticho is here, and he's bearded once more, which we have to tell you about since this is a podcast, and therefore you can't see him. And today we've brought back one of our all-time favorite guests, Wyatt Gilmore from Grant Stone, who we'll be talking about oh so many things with. Although not Grant Stone. Yes, that is the official theme here today. The guy who runs Grant Stone is not allowed to talk about Grant Stone. It's exactly like Fight Club, I guess. I haven't seen that in a while. I wonder what shoes Ed Norton was wearing in that. Ticho, do you remember? He was like a professional of some kind.
I don't remember, man. I don't know. Do you ever see his shoes? Maybe when he's like, you know, kicking somebody in the face or something? I don't know.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll look into this at the break. Before we get too deep into things, we need to give a loving ShoeCast shout out to our sponsor this week, Taft Shoes and Boots, whose new Stitch Down construction line launches today. Check out taftclothing.com to get a look at it. And if you've been enjoying this particular ShoeCast, the best way you can support it is by becoming a member of the Stitch Down premium community for 1/100th the cost of a pair of nice shoes per month. Your membership nets you $20 off Grant Stone purchases, discount on all Stitch Down collaborations, and most importantly, access to our private Discord server where everyone is dangerously obsessed with boots and shoes and leather and sizing. We have the greatest time ever, and if you hang around long enough, you'll probably win a pair of free boots. Not the worst place, I tell ya. Which is actually our new tagline. It just narrowly edged out, join the Stitch Down Discord, it won't kill you, at least not directly. Also, Wyatt's in there, not killing people, and hanging out, answering literally any question you have in remarkable detail. That's simply something that you can't put a price tag on. Join the community. Support the ShoeCast. It's that easy. Plenty more info on StitchDown.com. All right, let's do this thing. Wyatt, all days, but especially today, you're just a shoe guy who loves shoes and happens to run a shoe company, but that doesn't matter right now. We've rounded up some very excellent questions from our brethren in the Discord, and of course, just a few of our own. We can't wait to get to them. How you doing, man? Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is exciting. Glad to be back. And I have to say, that intro, it was awesome. It was so much better because I could see Ticho's face. he's grinning and laughing, and I'm just like, I couldn't do that.
It just came to me. It was all off the cuff. So thank you. I appreciate it. We need all the support we can get. It's great to have you back. It was great to see you out in Michigan. Man, I guess it was last year now. Just see the HQ and the gang out there. It was pretty remarkable. And just to see the literal growth of like shelves and boxes on all of them. It warmed the heart, warmed the cold shoe heart on a pretty cold day. I believe we drove 75 feet to lunch because it was too cold.
Yeah, that's kind of what we do here. We don't do a lot of walking.
All right, let's talk about shoes. We're going to start out with one from the Discord. I love this one. What would your pitch be, Wyatt, to someone considering purchasing their first pair of quality boots or shoes? Maybe this comes up. Maybe this is highly theoretical. But somebody's like thinking about it, and you're just trying to get them into, again, the general, no particular brand or company. We're trying to get somebody hooked. And they're like, I'm a little curious in this. What do you do? I know my approach, but we need to like kind of collate all these together so we can indoctrinate everybody throughout the world.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one because I think it's very personal, depending on like, especially if you know that person a little bit and you have an idea of what they're doing on a daily basis or where they live. I've always felt like, especially for Goodyear Welt, what draws people in is the way they look. That's what draws people in initially, is they, for some reason, are like, hey, I think this looks good. You know, I want a pair of boots, or I want a pair of shoes, or maybe they see a pair of long wings or something. So I think it's the look first. Then they start kind of looking at the details a little bit. And all the other core components of the product and why it actually performs well, especially like why a brand would do well over a long time, all of that stuff doesn't really even come into play until they actually have a pair for a while. And, you know, preferably something that fits, because then they get something and they wear it. They kind of force themselves to wear it, like a pair of like a raw denim or something. You know, you put them on, it's a nightmare, but you like force yourself to wear the shoes. And all of a sudden all these realizations start happening. Like let's say you've got a pair of Vibergs and you're wearing them like day in, day out for like a month. And then you go put on a pair of Vans New Era. It's a very different feeling. And you kind of get addicted to that. I mean, there's the support, and it doesn't really matter how old you are. You could be 16 years old or 80. It's like you put them on, you kind of have that support, the way that it kind of hugs your foot. And then of course it starts to like shape to your foot. So like all of that stuff happens, you know, after the fact. And so if I'm explaining that to someone, so if someone's like, oh, sell me on it or something, I mean, I'd probably start with that. So my wife's friend got a pair of a boot that some company wears, you know, I can't say the name, and it's a Badalassi leather, right? And like, so this girl, she's never heard of Goodyear Welt stuff. She's never heard of veg tan leathers or chrome, or like, she's like leather versus plastic. Like that's what she knows about leather. Leather's like on couches and nice cars. She's like, yeah, but what's up with this? It's kind of stiff. And I'm just like, you know, we're at their house. I was there like three tequilas deep. And I'm just like, let me tell you about this leather, you know? And so, and they just start going into it. Bring them over to the warehouse, you know, we'll put some like shoe cream on it and stuff. And then, you know, break them in, give it a couple weeks. Make sure you're wearing like a tall enough sock, because this leather is like no joke. It's not going to feel good if you're just wearing it like raw ankle, you know, shin on this boot and stuff, and you lace it tight. I mean, it's going to be a nightmare. You're going to hate it. So you have to break it in. As you wear it over the next couple of months, it's going to darken, and it's going to have these little scuffs, and you're not going to be so sure about those scuffs at first. And then you'll bring them over to us, and like we'll brush them and put some shoe cream on, and you're going to be like, these look really cool. It almost turns into this like vintage looking boot for someone who has no clue what it is. It's like, it's almost like going vintage shopping and seeing like a cool pair of like cowboy boots that are like recently buffed or something. It just has that leather look, the break and all that. And then she was just like, I like this.
The comfort thing is a really good point. Like, yes, you have to like them. And then you kind of have to, when you're just getting started, believe in the idea that they will become comfortable eventually. I mean, I put on some Vans the other day just to, like, run out. I haven't worn probably years. I'm sorry, everybody. I was like, oh, like, I don't, how did I, like, walk 6 miles a day in, like, New York City in my past wearing these? It like, didn't make any sense. But at the time, you believe it, right? You believe that, like, your Nikes or your New Balance or Vans or whatever are, like, quite comfortable. And that feeling, which you describe as being supportive and comforting, maybe, you knew that the best part was like in the future, because like somebody told you that, right? Or you read about it on the internet. Like, especially with like some early Red Wings I had, you're like, oh, here we go. Here's the gauntlet, right? Like, isn't this going to be great eventually? And I feel like, yeah, the idea that you have to find out about that somehow, or like we all, everybody listening to this has to help people who are interested understand that, one, if it's painful in the beginning, like wrong size, don't get them. But two, there's like a better life coming. I think that that's one of the more important things. And, you know, there's not too many people who don't feel like that's delivered on, in my experience.
You know what I feel like the most addictive feeling is the leather insole. Like once it's glossy and it has wear on it, like you can't get that from anything else. Like it has to be leather insole. And then like the shoe that has to have a leather insole, it's going to be some type of Goodyear Welt, generally speaking. And it's like, once you have that like marbled leather insole and you wear it, with like, it doesn't matter what socks or whatever. It's just like, this is the best feeling ever. And then you put on like a pair of sneakers and it's like this nappy fabric. It's like pulling your sock off. It's like, it's incredible, right? But you, imagine trying to explain that in an email to someone. They'd be like, this person's insane.
I had this guy, I was like kind of selling at this like vintage marketplace. And this guy came in, he's wearing like, I think they were like Steve Maddens. He's like, these are like my favorite boots. I love these things. I've had them for 3-4 years, whatever. They're totally shredded. They're like my favorite boots. That, you know, they form to my foot. They're super comfortable, you know. And I'm looking at them, and like, you know, there's holes in them. There's nothing left on the sole. He's walking into, you know, the like fake leather heel stack that was on it, whatever. And I'm like, all right, man, like, you know, I got like a pair of Vibergs here. You know, you should try these out. It's a similar kind of style. But like, let me just tell you, you're gonna put your feet in these right now, and they're gonna be the most uncomfortable things that you've ever experienced compared to, you know, what you're wearing right now. He's like, okay, you're not really like selling me on this, you know, like you're not making a great sales pitch here. You're like, and I'm like, all right, man, but like think about the like heyday of these boots. Like think about the peak, right, where they still looked really good. The leather was still, you know, hadn't started falling apart. The soles were still together, but they were like totally formed to your foot. They were so comfortable. You could put them on every day, not think about it. It's an absolute joy. Think about if instead of having that last for like 2-3 years on these Steve Maddens, think about if that lasted for like 10 plus years. Like for 10 plus years, you could just pull these things on every day and they were just perfect. Like they just were exactly what you wanted. And he was like, yeah, that's like, you know, that does sound attractive. He didn't buy them. So I don't know if that was a great, it was a great sales pitch, but I stand by that. I'm like, you
what
know.
What are you doing taking 6 months to like break in a pair of shoes anyway?
They're tough boots, man. They're tough. They're tough. But like the peak of them is going to be great. You just got to get there.
You might want to refine that pitch a little bit. Wyatt, pitch us. Pitch us. This one's direct from me. Pitch us on Tassel Loafers. This is your next pitch. What am I missing? Where is my blind spot? And we're talking about general Tassel Loafers made by any brand, of course. Could be anybody. But I wore certain brands loafers for the first time, like hard, nonstop. I had a pair of Alden Color 8, still have them. Leisure Hand Zones that I picked up, I don't know, 4 years ago maybe. But like, I never really committed to them. And last summer, I got some suede loafers, and I wore them basically every day. I wore them as my house shoes. They're phenomenal. I've literally never worn socks with them. They became a part of me. I can't wait to do it again next summer. But those are penny loafers. And the Tassel Loafer, despite that experience, despite trying to pick up a pair of JM Weston 180s that didn't end up fitting and I really wanted to work. Actually, getting these JM Weston 180 triple soles in Paris, you know, which were not cheap, and I'm working to break these things in. Like, I'm committed myself to this loafer lifestyle in ways that I'm, like, not even remembering as I'm telling this story. And then there's Tassel Loafers, and I'm like, these Tassel Loafers. But then, like, Wyatt's out here rocking some brands' Tassel Loafers. What am I missing? Am I missing something? Is it me? Is it the loafers?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you're not missing anything. I mean, it's like back in the day, I used to spend a lot of time like on style form because I still do think it's like it's a great way to look and understand why people think the way they do about certain style. And I mean, in style, more being not so much like the finer details, but, oh, I never wear a sport coat versus the next person who's like, well, I only wear a suit and tie versus the next person who's like, I refuse to tuck my shirt in. And that's okay too. And it's like, I just think that today you can kind of dress however you want to. And there are no limits really as far as like the dress versus casual and stuff. I mean, those words don't exist anymore because you can have these people like Simon Crompton, who's like a lot of people would consider him as far as like a writer of menswear, incredibly knowledgeable and everything else. But if you have the average American read one article, they're going to be like, what? It's like my casual days, you know, it's a little lighter weight fabric sport coat and maybe a trouser with a lighter color to it and may or may not wear socks with loafers. But the people who are reading that, they think that's normal. And then meanwhile, it's like someone's like, you can't wear Tassel Loafers with denim. That's insane. It's like there's someone over there wearing Yeezys with a pant that didn't exist more than 3 years ago, joggers. Like that's the majority of people around the world. That's okay. None of it matters, right? Like I think that's cool that there's rules for like menswear, but I would never even consider to think that even a fraction of, especially like Americans or anywhere actually follow any of this stuff. I mean, we know better by now, right? I mean, like, Ben, I mean, we'll get together. TCO, you know, we get together, whether it's Chicago, New York City, whatever. I mean, you go to a nice restaurant, you're not going to see someone there in a suit, let alone probably a sport coat. You're out of place in a sport coat. Because I used to do that going to visit customers. I liked suits, especially more like the fun ones. Like, I used to always go to Armory. Those were the guys who I always kind of, I saw their stuff. And I'm just like, that was my pinnacle of like looking sharp, but also not just going and buying a suit because it's appropriate or respectful. It's very, very difficult to like pinpoint, you know, what's dress, what's casual, what's acceptable, what's not. For like a Tassel Loafer, something so basic, it's like I look around and you see what people are wearing and what they're matching it with and mixing it with. Tassel Loafers and some denim and a t-shirt, it's no big deal. No one thinks, no one looks twice, no one says anything, you know. I think as a shoe, I think penny loafer is almost like that's the first loafer you get into because it's very basic in a sense of you've seen it X amount of times. I always have that. I like thought people are comfortable with something based on how many times they've seen it. especially if they're going to wear it themselves. If they've seen it a million times, they're very comfortable wearing it. If they've only seen it a couple times, or like they're just being introduced to it, they might think it's cool, but they're like, yeah, I'm not wearing it though. That's for sure. I think the penny loafer is like that first step into like wearing loafers and not thinking it's like someone's grandpa's Basswegians or whatever. And then the tassel loafer is just, I mean, yeah, it's more fine. And just the name tassel scares people away, right? They're like, I'm not wearing that. I don't even know what it is. I'm not wearing it. Definitely not on a shoe. It's on the front of the shoe. Count me out. That's what's cool about like the cities though, you know, and I think that's where a lot of our customers are, where you can kind of get away with wearing whatever. So like a tassel loafer, I think it's more of like, especially once you have multiple pairs of loafers, you kind of gradually just like, I wouldn't mind a pair of like suede loafers to just, it's one more step up. It's like, hey, I've got a plain toe boot. I've got this, I've got a mock toe, but you know, I want a split toe. You know, I want a perf cap toe boot. Why do you have perf cap toe boot? No reason. It's just a little different. It's just a little different. It's just a little busier of a pattern. You know, that's all it is. Definitely didn't sell you on it, but that's the only thing I can come up with.
I think I'm sold. Couple thoughts here. Number one, I'm not on my game right now. Because you mentioned a word that was basically the name of your company or something related to it. So we have to give you a... on Diesel Boot.
Oh.
And I missed it, so it's my fault. So, I mean, you're not actually penalized here, but we're just going to say... like, that's what you're going to hear from here on out. And if you like that noise, keep saying it. You know, that's fine. If you don't, I would avoid it. Two, the thing I miss most about the city and living there... I mean, I don't know if this is most, but it's like, it's right up there. It's just, you can dress however you want, right? And like, you probably should dress cool. And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, for me, that has to be formal in any way. But nobody's ever going to be like, why'd you tuck your shirt in? Which is something I would never do, obviously. I'm sorry, Wyatt and Jake and all those people.
I've asked you that question before. You're like, God, no.
I don't know. Not my thing. You want to do something cool, and like the boots and the pants and the shirt, the jackets, whatever, like it was more free flowing, and like you never once thought that you shouldn't do something. You're like, should I go a little harder today? I'm going 4 blocks to get a seltzer. I'm like going to drop off my dry cleaning. Let's stunt it out a little bit. Everywhere else other than like some US cities, I feel like there is a should I not be trying to cause a stir, right, with anything that I'm wearing? And I actually think that in the end, the tassel loafer, like a black calf tassel loafer, is maybe like a nice quiet way to like do your own thing and not have anybody like jumping down your throat, because it's like, it's just chilling down there at the bottom. And yeah, anytime when I go in now, like in the winter, in the summer, whenever, like nice denim and a black tassel loafer with like huge white socks or something, that's become like a bit of like a little mini uniform for, I'm not even sure like what group of guys, but you know, they're hanging out in like cool stores that I'm popping into and purchasing nothing at. Yeah, there's something to it. There's something to it. I don't know if it's me yet. I don't know if this is like the summer of tassel loafer Ben, but it's going to be a summer of some kind of loafer Ben all over again, which I'm excited about.
It just reminded me of one thing a little bit, where it's like you said, it's not so much about like dressing up, but I remember when I was overseas, we'd make trips to Tokyo because it was 2 hours, 3 hours away, just to literally go see shoe stores and leather accessory stores, whatever. And it's not like an American thing as far as like going casual, and people are like, oh yes, it is, sneakers and dressing casual. It's like, yeah, but it's very Western, but at the same time, it's kind of happening everywhere. But the one thing about Tokyo that obviously it's a standout, and it's not, I mean, there's nothing to really compare to that. But even sometimes when you feel like, I don't want to dress up, when you're in a place and everyone looked like they cared when they got dressed in the morning, it's a different feeling. I don't know how to describe it, but you go to a restaurant when a waiter, waitress is dressed up nicely, whatever. And it's a very, very different feeling, right? Versus someone who comes up and, imagine your waiter, waitress wearing sandals, shorts, and a t-shirt. Like, you probably would not really care to eat there, you know? And it's like, obviously that's exaggeration, but it's kind of like, yeah, but we do it. But if you're in an environment where people are dressed up, you can appreciate it for some reason.
My favorite thing, like, I went on my honeymoon in Tokyo, Kyoto, but like certainly Tokyo, just like Tokyo old man style. One of my favorite, like I aspire to that. Oh God, they got tassels. They have so many tassels. Like Tokyo construction worker style, I became obsessed with. They wear these like huge pants and like cool boots. And like these guys like think about it. And it's like these young guys who are excited to have this career because one, like, they probably consider themselves craftsmen, and two, they get to wear these huge, gigantic pants and cool boots with them. Like, obviously, this isn't happening everywhere, but yeah, in New York and other cities too. Like, when everybody's got like something cool going on, for the most part, let's play along with this. It's not even like, oh, I got to keep up or I got to like top somebody. It's like, this is just what we're doing and it's cool. Frankly, like the boots and shoes and whatever were like my main way of kind of expressing myself in that environment, which was great. Nobody ever confused me for tassel loafer guy. They're like, oh, that's like that's the Dinkelocker guy. Why is he wearing these crazy things again? It's like, well, let's talk about him, man. I'll tell you about a braided Norwegian welt. Let's go. Are you familiar with Budapest? They make shoes there. Okay, so this is from our guy Iftikhar in the Discord and in real life. Shout out, Ifty. But this is playing off of this. I don't know if this is too forward-looking. We could pick a different year. Yeah, his question was dressy versus casual, your personal definition. I think we've hit on that a lot. But, like, where is this all going? He's like, what is going to happen in, like, 2050 or 2075? Like, what is the definition of dress footwear careening towards? It's a pretty interesting question to think about, because that's like a long ways away when every year it seems like, yeah, we're more casual now.
I'll start off by saying I'm definitely not qualified to answer such a large question, but I'm just going to give my random opinion on this. It's like, in our space, it's something to think about and look at, but I mean, imagine tailors, suit makers, things like that, where they've looked at a lot of industries, regardless of country, that it's not necessary to wear any type of suit or a jacket maybe. So, you know, it goes away from that. But if I'm ever in a conversation with someone who knows more about that or is in that space of suiting, I mean, they're kind of like, yeah, but we always feel like it comes back and it comes in waves, because if you have that very, very casual wear, I mean, like joggers and hoodies and things like that, which I think are acceptable in most workplaces today, they really are. Yeah, it'll just come down to people as a whole if they want to care a little more about how they get dressed up, whether that means it has to go back to the classic silhouettes of sport coats and tucking in a shirt and higher waist and dress shoes or leather shoes. You know, I'm not sure, but it's like, I don't know. I mean, there's also an industry behind it, right? Like the industry that we're in, and also fashion in general, which I think everyone kind of doesn't really look at fashion, especially like for our industry specifically, or suiting and stuff, but they kind of do lead the trends that way and kind of always push those boundaries to kind of create a middle ground for the average person. It's like, if you look at the model maybe who's even wearing a J. Crew jacket you're about to buy, you're probably not going to wear top from bottom what he is, but you're like, that jacket looks good. You're like, but I'm gonna throw them out with these old jeans and like my boots, but you know, I like that jacket. And so I think it's really up to the brands, I guess, to lead that direction, whether it's more casual or more, I guess, more formal. But yeah, I have no clue. But I mean, you know, as far as like leather footwear, I don't feel like it's as much of a concern whether it'll be around. But maybe the styles, like maybe the stuff like that we would be making now that doesn't qualify as a buzzer, I don't think that is too much of a concern, because it's so casual, right? It's a spectrum. It's a spectrum of, some people say, yeah, you can dress it up all the way down to casual, whatever that means. There's a huge spectrum of how you can wear a lot of leather footwear. And I think leather in general, people are just naturally, they're drawn to it. You go look at like a BMW from like the 90s with like a whiskey cognac interior or something. You're just like, kind of smells good. That's just what you get from leather, you know. But yeah, you'd think it comes back a little bit, right? I mean, kind of the same thing we're talking about. You go somewhere else and you can really appreciate it when other people dress up.
I love it when people are dressed up. I love it. The shoes got to be a part of it. It hugely disappoints me every time somebody's dressed up and their shoes are just, you're like, come on, man, come on, come on. But yeah, there's like something to it. And again, dressed up can mean a whole lot of things these days. And yeah, when you think about it, like the bulk of this country that we all live in, we're talking about like the sliver of 1% of 1% of 1% who are even like considering any of this stuff, right? And yet we're talking about it as if it actually matters. You go to any wedding except for like a wedding full of incredibly fancy people who are maybe like in fashion or just like shockingly rich. There's a guy in shorts at that fucking wedding every time, maybe sandals. And then there's a range of how everybody else is necessarily dressed. So like, is there a need to put restrictions or whatever on any of this anymore? Like, clearly not. But the idea of it is still kind of appealing. And like, I don't know, I think in 2075, like all the footwear won't necessarily look like it's from some sort of sci-fi movie from like 1987 predicting 2087. But yeah, hopefully we're still just kind of like rocking the same stuff and like a different cycle, you know, or slightly better versions of it, maybe.
So let me ask you two a question. Do you think there is any benefit to certain companies or organizations or workplaces outside of finance and law that already do this that have certain guidelines for how you dress?
It's hard, man. I mean, I've worked in law. My wife works in finance, and like people still wear terrible stuff every single day. I mean, it's people will always kind of take it as casual as they can go. And, you know, there's always going to be a certain person who wants to put on a really nice pair of leather boots and class the whole thing up. But yeah, I think companies making people dress a certain way is just never gonna really work. Like, people are always gonna chafe under that. I think what we kind of need to do, Ben, what you and I kind of seek out to do here, and you know, I think Wyatt, you're in support of this too, is just kind of build interest, right? Is build interest amongst the general population in wearing nicer shoes and wearing nicer clothes. And I think for our generation of people who, you know, I guess we're millennials, right? Ben, are you still a millennial? I know you're kind of old.
I am incredibly old. I'm right on the borderline. I didn't have high-speed internet until I went to college.
Okay.
And so I'm not a millennial.
Right on. Well, we'll count you. You're on board with this, so we'll give you like a special dispensation. But like, I feel like our generation of kind of millennials who are right now kind of the bulk of the, you know, young working population, like, I think we are looking at things a little bit differently. I think we are looking at the marketplace of what products are available to us and saying, you know, a lot of this is garbage. You know, why is this being made? You know, why are we making all these terrible plastic shoes and shipping them around the world and having them be on somebody's feet for like 6 months to a year and fall apart and then sit in a landfill? Like, why aren't we making things out of leather, making things out of higher quality materials and having it, you know, actually provide a good value to the end consumer and have it last for a longer time so that it doesn't just end up in a landfill in a year, 2 years? I think there is interest in that. People do want that. And as more and more of the older generation kind of kick off here and more of us are in charge of making these decisions for what products are available in the marketplace, I think there is some hope, man. I do have some hope that we're going to be able to like piece this together and have really high quality products available for people to wear, right? If we can make a law that everybody needs to wear like Goodyear welted footwear, I mean, that would be sick. We should do that.
It could be tough to enforce, but I think it's worth investigating. We'll talk to Jeff, the denim dentist, surgeon general, but he should have some input. Why? My answer to your question is it all depends on the client, right? Like, internally, you're just looking at each other and, you know, you see how like creatives dress, which is cool, right? Like, people work at like branding agencies. You're like, oh, fuck, you guys are all impressively dressed and cool and avant-garde because like you need to draw inspiration from like yourself and everything around you. And let's get into it. But really, for the most part, it's outward, right? And that's where a lot of this stuff came from. And like, lawyers have to look professional in a courtroom, and people who are selling somebody something kind of have to dress like the person that they're talking to and selling to, right? In a way. Like, I have a buddy who came from a lifetime in like, you know, kind of finance and like personal finance and trading, whatever, but dealing with like big kind of individual clients who are guys who are like, hey, you know, trade my money for me and come skiing with me. Past their personal point of having to dress to impress anybody else. So he kind of dressed like them. And he's wearing, you know, Sperry's or whatever and, you know, just some slacks and like a little more dressed up, right? He's the professional one and they're the one who's like basically kind of retired and just enjoying their life. But he would like kind of come close and then like exceed them a little bit, but not too far. And now he's working in a sales job, which is kind of his previous job in a way, that the industry has completely changed and it's like more industrial. And so, like, we're constantly talking about what kind of boots he should buy. Like, Alden. He's kind of obsessed with Alden. I think he made his first move on a pair of Aldens, like, a couple months ago. But he's like, how do I, like look good? Like, look good? I don't want to wear Timberlands to this thing. But I kind of don't want to be the guy who's overdressed to this whole situation. Because it's like, who's the client? Now, they have like a range of clients, but a lot of it is, you know, in this kind of like service industry area. Yeah, in the end, that makes a ton of sense. Business is based on sales in some way, but as everything gets more casual, then the hope is that everybody's clients at least want to like wear cool shoes or boots so you can like meet them where they are and everybody's happy and more comfortable. Look, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with Wyatt Gilmore of... All right, Ticho, it's high time we talked about Taft's stitch-down boots. Stitch-down.
Oh, did you have something to do with this, or what?
Wait, did I? Taft, Corey.
Love Corey.
We just interviewed him for this podcast.
I used to work for him.
Used to work for him. Maybe you do know this, maybe you don't know this. Stitch-down is also a revered and centuries-old method of shoe construction. Stitch-down. It's a new direction for the brand and, you know, one that just happens to align in terms of nomenclature, which is thrilling.
I love when that happens.
Right?
Yeah.
Not nearly enough. We had nothing to do with these. I had nothing to do with these. And yet, in my hand, I'm actually holding really damn handsome Chelsea boot made with a beautiful double row stitch down construction in León, Mexico. And it's a Taft boot, which is completely new for them. They've done Goodyear Welt. They've done Blake. This is the first time they've ever done a stitch down boot. It feels substantial. This is the new chapter for Taft, and it's pretty cool.
Pretty exciting, man. You know, there haven't been like a ton of options if you're real into stitch down, especially the double row stitch down, especially at a reasonable price, right? Like, let's get some clean double row stitch down. Let's get some cool leathers. Let's get some cool patterns, and let's get it done. This is right up my alley with like a stitch down boot. Got a service boot, got a Chelsea, classics. Love it. You know, nice choice of leathers to start out here.
This pair that I have right here, CF Stead Nutmeg Kudu. Pretty sure yours is a waxy commander. It's got like the heft of, you know, product that you don't always see from Taft. Yeah, check these things out. They drop, if we time this properly, today. The Legion Chelsea boot, the Legacy service boot, made in León, Mexico, stitch down construction at taftclothing.com. Back to the shoecast. All right, we're back. We are back with Wyatt Gilmore from, I think I can say this, Grant Stone. Oh, I didn't get beeped. That's amazing. But he can't say that. And we're talking about all sorts of stuff that doesn't have anything to do with his company. So look, Wyatt, we were just kind of talking, oh, man, I don't know when this was. This might have, definitely last year at some point, probably early in the year. You brought up this point that I had never really thought about before. And it was, you look at other portions of the footwear industry, you know, some of them in the welted category and some of them certainly not. And you think about how some of the most successful categories have these lifestyles attached to them. We were talking about Vans earlier. Everybody knows what Vans mean. They're really cool to drive. I have one. It's called a minivan. And it's a lot better than most people think. And is also all-wheel drive and quite capable. Also, Vans, the footwear, the sneakers. Like, most people have had a pair at some point. Most of those people have never ridden a skateboard before, but there is this connotation and this connection to skateboarding, right? It's like, well, here they are. Yeah, Vans. You know, California and, like, what skateboarding represents, right? Like, freedom and youth and all this stuff that, frankly, isn't even, like, necessarily pushed by marketing in a sense. It's just, like, who is capable of riding skateboards without severely injuring themselves? You know, we've talked about Western boots, the technical aspects of a cowboy boot, the heel, you know, how it fits into a stirrup and the toe. Like, that's not actually what people are doing every single day. There's a heel and a toe, and I feel like they both go into a stirrup somehow. I've ridden a horse once. It was a terrible experience. I thought I was going to go really fast, and like, it didn't work out that way. And I was like, I just wanted to get off. It was kind of painful. Anyway, but if you're wearing a pair of cowboy boots, you know what that represents, right? Maybe it's a rodeo or maybe it's like the Old West. But again, it's like, I guess it all comes down to some feeling of like American freedom, whatever. But like, these industries are kind of based upon that, right? And like, the iconography doesn't even necessarily have to be said. Like, the footwear carries it in this fascinating way. And guess what? Tons and tons of people whose lives are, maybe to give them some credit, tangentially attached to those lifestyles. Most people, like, not really, right? Like, I've got a whole bunch of Vans that I haven't worn in years and used to wear all the time and are responsible for breaking my foot and, like, eventually doing this podcast because my foot broke and I needed good shoes. But I hadn't been on a skateboard since I was 12 and I was terrible at it. And, like, who knows what I was wearing? You know, what are, like, Nikes and basketball shoes and Jordans reflect, right? And what you said to me is, well, like, what does this reflect for us? Like, what does our category reflect? Like, going to an office? And it was like, It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, no, that is exciting. That's like a huge selling point that like we should probably like push from a marketing perspective way more. You're like, oh, shit, yeah. I don't know. Like some of the hiking stuff, you know, is like the closest you get. But like things based on military boots, it's like I was in a parade, like a military parade dress experience once. And like that's what I'm trying to like. No, no. It's like it's a different understanding of like heritage and whatever that is completely non-obvious to like a bystander, which is kind of why you wear the, you wear them for yourself, but you wear them for everybody else. Right. Like just like the what do you wear to work conversation that we just had. So this isn't even a question. Like, it's just something interesting that I've been thinking about nonstop since you did it. And, like, here he is. It's not a question, and here's an answer, and that's why we had this guy on the show.
Yeah, because it's all ridiculous opinion that I have. But here, you know, the first two things is, like, you know, you mentioned the Western stuff, and, like, we were talking about 20 years from now. I do see how, again, just kind of like an unfounded opinion here, but, like, I feel like Western is one category that would continue to grow. Especially here in America. I mean, look at a show like Yellowstone. It inspires people for some reason to wear a cowboy hat or to dress a little more rugged and tough, buy those Tecovis, buy those Ariats, and get out there. And it's like, there are so many cowboy boots sold every year here. It is unbelievable.
The numbers are so different from the industry that we talk about, right?
Oh, it's hundreds of times of whatever we're doing. You know, and I say we, I'm Goodyear Welt, like, dress business casual, not a specific brand, like as a market. And Western trumps it on all categories, especially volume. And so it's like, I can see that. Why? Hard to say, you know, but it just continues to grow. And it's like this idea of getting out there in the country, even though you don't have to anymore. And maybe that's the reason, right? Is like we're cooped up all the time. And unfortunately, to make a living, a lot of times you have to use computers and technology. And people are just like, yeah, but I got to get away from that after a certain amount of time. And so they're like, they're really drawn to like Yellowstone, right? So it's like, so anyways, that's...
It's a pretty good show. I've been a Costner fan my whole life, but it's a pretty good show. I get it.
Right, right. And it's, I mean, people like romanticize it to be like, wow, I wish I could, you know, like, I want to go to Yellowstone now. I want to go to Montana. It's like that. And then shout out to the Discord, Stitchdown Discord. Someone asked, what brand would I want to run for a day or something like that? I think Lucchese would be a cool brand to run. Just totally off topic here.
Why? Why?
It's so different. And, you know, honestly, like their boots, the way they finish, like Holland, who you've met, you know, who works at Ariat, it's like, how creative they can get with Western boots is absurd. It's unbelievable. The leathers that he works with and that he designs and the stitching combined with welts, and it's insane. Like we can't like scratch the surface of what he's like making on a quarterly basis. It's unbelievable. So it's like that part of it is really cool and it's fun and it's interesting. And yeah, people buy them and they love them, you know? So like I think the Western thing is like, it really resonates with a lot of people here. We went to Austin recently down there and it's like there's Western boots. You go to these stores, went to Tecovis store, go to the store next to it, they sell Lucchese and Ariat and everything, and it's like just packed with people. And there is just boots everywhere, ranging from, you know, 200 to, you know, Stingray and whatever, alligator boots for, you know, $2,000, $3,000. It's like it's a pretty unique category actually. You gotta really want to wear those things, but like it's really interesting as far as the development, the leather behind it, and everything else.
I haven't told you this. They were supposed to have arrived by now. They might be lost, and I may have lost my shot. But I have my first pair of cowboy boots arriving, I guess, tomorrow. Like a lovingly pre-owned? What's the way that people put this? Certified pre-owned? It's certified pre-owned. Audi certified them, personally. They just happen to be. They're certifying everything now. It's a new business line. Of Tony Lama's. From I think like the 80s. My guy Valley Watches in the Discord, he's put me into a class by request over the past like 6 months to understand cowboy boots and Western boots just more, because I think overall, like despite the overwhelming breadth of the category that represents all forms and all levels of quality, like the highest end cowboy boots are, along with I would say Pacific Northwest makers and what's going on in Maine with hand zones, which is very different construction, are the bastion of American bootmaking. like high-end American bootmaking, craft, skill, precision, all of those things. And I think we've like just ignored them for far too long because stylistically it's like this big jump, right? From basically anything to that. And I'm saying, you know what? I gotta like figure this out for myself. So I've been like looking a lot more at them and like trying to understand them and like, why are the toes so pointy? Oh, well, possibly those stirrups that we mentioned earlier, which isn't really my vibe. And like, how do I get my head around this and like, you know, get a cheap used pair on eBay, basically. But yeah, it's like, if you think about what the mass categories are, right? Like our goal, and I think more and more for me personally in my outlook and hopefully everybody, like the Western boots can become part of this category in the way that I think about it in terms of, okay, like the world and like the country that we live in and the state that I live in, like we're doing better, right? In terms of people wearing quality footwear instead of crap. That Western boots should be included in that, but you look at Western, you look at Vans, you look at Jordans, you look at running shoes, frankly, like my lifestyle is fitness, okay? Like I'm running, I'm at the gym, whatever. And like these are things that I'm actually spending a whole bunch of money on, right? Like hundreds of dollars for any of these things at the minimum. To sell a ton of anything, it almost needs to have this lifestyle attached to it. A lifestyle, some lifestyle. And for us, my answer to you, you were like, well, what's the lifestyle for us? And I was like, well, it's the boots, man. Like the lifestyle is the boots. And God, you have to be like so deep and so deranged and listening to this podcast and making this podcast to ever have that like come out of your mouth to be like, no, well, obviously lifestyle is like just the boots. And like we think about boots and construction and leather and like all this stuff. And that's not one, maybe we're joking about ourselves or maybe it's quite serious. Like one, that's not normal. But two, it's not projectable, right? You can kind of be an individual boot guy and people are like, oh yeah, Ben's that boot guy and he's always got some boots on and like, aren't they cool? And those people don't inherently understand any of those boots. They don't understand the logging heritage and references behind them. They don't understand the other kind of workwear roofing. They don't understand, you know, some of the dressier stuff. And, you know, they certainly don't understand the Dinkelhockers. What level of impediment is that to like further mass adoption, right? Because everybody needs to have like a lifestyle displayed on their foot. And the one of it's just the boots doesn't translate effectively. And that's what I've been trying to figure out ever since we talked about that like a year ago.
I think it's a little bit simpler. We went to a watch show in Chicago, Warner One watch show, and we were there, you know, it was all watches. There's like one Spirit brand there, and then we had some shoes there. And it's like that part, I think, is the closest thing to what an enthusiast in our category, I think it's the closest little segue to that. And honestly, it's for anyone who's into details. I mean, talk to someone who's really into watches and knows the model numbers of different brands of watches and the movements and whatever. And it's like, what's the lifestyle of that? You know, and I think that category though is so big. I guess they don't need one. It's watches, you know, it's so huge. They don't need one. It's just literally watches is one thing as a whole, because you can either wear like a Casio or Rolex, whatever. And you're still as one, you're still in the watch segment, you know?
That's an interesting distinction because not everybody who wears shoes would be considered to be somebody who's like, because you don't have to wear a watch.
Right. And so it's like, but I think that's like the closest, I mean, at least if you can have some parallel between these, a couple markets, I mean, I think having watches, footwear, whether that's food, liquor, these different things. I mean, you see that with the everyday carry stuff like handmade accessories and things like that. Like you said a little while back, it's almost a person who's trying to be creative in some way or trying to find inspiration in some way where they look at something and every little thing that they're dealing with during a day, they kind of consider it as individual and they want to like take care of it, whatever. It's like not disposable. And like, if I'm going to buy wine glasses, like, and I'm not talking about you have to be some, I'm not talking about millionaire, billionaire situation. It's just like, I'm going to buy two wine glasses. What kind of glass is this? You know, well, why is this one like $18? This one's $45. This one's $95. Like, well, what's up with that? And like, especially if you get into manufacturing or if you are into boots or you're into leather or you're into watches, that just comes automatically. And of course, you're going to find things that you're going to go, hey, I'm not going to spend $200 on this particular t-shirt. You know, like I'm going to buy $25 shirts from J. Crew, like whatever. Like, it's not to say you have to buy everything that's like the top end or something. It's not that. It's more just thinking about these individual items and then kind of going a little deeper. This is thinking about certain things, because like I'm saying, it's not like you have to buy the best of everything at all times. Like it's not that at all. Just kind of understanding certain things that you want to get into a little bit and picking and choosing, obviously. And then sometimes if you spend a little more, you know, maybe it lasts a little longer. And I mean, obviously whatever the quality kind of comes with it sometimes. So you may not even necessarily have to invest more to walk away a little happier and then also find something that's pretty interesting.
I always tell people this is a great hobby if you like don't have a lot of time. Because you need to wear boots, right? You need to wear shoes. You can't be barefoot. And
you're multitasking.
Yeah. Why not take something that you need to do anyway and make it enjoyable? Make it your hobby. Make it something that does add value to your day, right? You know, I've gotten innumerable people into this. And that's one, you know, one thing that I hear coming back to me is they're like, yeah, like I get up in the morning and I can like look at all, I open up the closet. Look at the shelf. There's all these cool boots. There's all these cool leathers. I get to decide which one I wear. Then I'm wearing them all day. They're comfortable. I'm on my feet. They're feeling good. I'm looking down at these things. They're looking fun. There is some nerd aspect to it, and you can, you know, get as into it as you want, right? Like, I spend all this time, like, taking pictures of my boots. It's like, oh, well, what's the lifestyle that, you know, goes with your boots? It's like, oh, well, I put them in a tote bag and I go in the woods or take them to another town because I don't want to do it in the town where I live, and I take pictures of them, you know. And it's like, okay, well, this is kind of my hobby. It's kind of the thing I do.
Just call it like, photography, which is a hobby that's generally accepted by normal people. That's kind of legit, right? iPhones have helped with that.
And it's like, it's kind of fun. Like I know so many people who get into this stuff and are like, yeah, the best part is just taking the pictures of them. You know, it's like, it's actively fun. I don't recommend doing it in like the apartment complex where you live because people will think you're super weird. I've certainly had a lot of people look at me real weird, but it's awesome. Like I'm like, oh, where can I just go find like weird backdrops and like weird puddles and find just weird spots to like take pictures of my boots? That's the lifestyle, right? The lifestyle is that boots are my hobby. In doing that, I kind of save a bunch of time because I don't have a lot of time to like do hobbies. You know, I played golf once last year, but I wore boots every day. In that regard, like if you can kind of get people to see that and like start living that way, they do get it. I know a lot of people who have gotten into it and seen it and now have like 4 or 5 pairs at least.
Yeah, you get to integrate it in your everyday life versus, you know, something, yeah, it just doesn't take too much effort. Yeah.
The stretch goal of this podcast and the entire Stitch Down enterprise is to get everybody in the entire world wearing high quality, wonderful shoes and boots that they truly love. That's the stretch goal. The realistic goal is just like a whole lot more every day, month, year. That is hugely important in kind of a selfish manner. I want there to be brands and manufacturers that are making incredibly great stuff that I love personally so I can continue to wear it. Wyatt, I think like this is the big question. Like you are on the inside working at a brand. Like, you see what's going on. The last couple of years have been a little different, a little rough. I think that a whole lot of things got thrown out of balance. Maybe some have settled and maybe some haven't. What's your outlook? What are you seeing from, you know, the componentry on up in terms of positive bellwethers for the industry and like maybe some other realities that anybody who really cares about this needs to understand at a very real level because it's hopefully something that they love?
I would say to start with, regardless of a brand that, you know, we make shoes for or whoever, if I was working for whoever they may be, you need your suppliers. And like, I mean, honestly, without the likes of Badalassi, Annonay, Horween, CF Stead, I mean, they're making like very, very unique niche products that if you think about it, you look at their family history and everything else, it's a very, very... It's not like cottage, it's just industry, but it's like it's almost becoming that to a certain extent. But I mean, it's still not because they find their channels to where they can have a few articles and have some consistency and have a good business, I think. But it's like you start with that. And I'm coming from the perspective of like, let's say today, instead of making a product that's using the middle to higher end upper leathers, you just try to go for a good leather, but doesn't have a name behind it, doesn't have a tanner name behind it that people recognize and things like that. Or even lesser of a leather that's maybe it's pigmented, whatever, it's split leathers and things like that. It's a very different process that it's hard to appreciate unless, yeah, you see a lot of pairs or you see a lot of articles and you see a lot of, you go there and see it. So I think the brands that are actually producing the shoes and selling them, whether it's their partners or retailers that are selling them, I mean, it's a huge part of this whole thing, which it doesn't seem to be going away. I mean, it seems to be going, shifting 100% from shoes to boots. I mean, we started with 7 shoes and now it's like 80% boots, 20% shoes, sales included. And it's like, that was more natural than anything else. It was more of a demand thing than anything else. And maybe not even so much style count, but it's just like more people buy a brown boot than they do a brown shoe, at least our customer. You know, when you go through the whole process and you see these small businesses that are making these really unique products, I mean, it's just really cool, right? I mean, it's really cool. I remember being in Tokyo one time and getting a card holder that had, it was silver. It had a turquoise Badalassi Minerva box stitched onto the front, and I still have it and use it all the time. And it's like, and I use it all the time. I don't carry business cards, but yeah, I've got
you
it.
You have it.
I've got it.
You have it.
Because when I go see Ben, I carry it with me and like give him a card every time.
He gave me like 8 cards last time.
That's so cool to see, because that leather's so expensive to produce. It's not because like they're going over the top. It's just time consuming, right? It's time. And for the majority of the leather industry, which is 100% automobile, I mean, they can't have these long lead times and stuff like that. I mean, they have to be, it's really fast. It's got to be fast. Otherwise, it's not going to work. There's too much volume there. So we're working on schedules of these tanneries. Hey, it's going to be 1-2 months. You know what? Right now, this season's going to be 4 months before you ship your leather. You're like, all right. It kind of is what it is. And I kind of really like that. Not from a business standpoint. It's terrible. But I really like how it's like, hey, it's difficult right now. We have less people, whatever. And obviously the tannage takes so much time. We only have this many hides because of this and that. And yeah, we can only deliver you this amount of time. Like, it's no quick fix and whatever else. And honestly, for the end consumer, it is incremental differences, right? It is an incremental difference from, let's say, a good but generic chrome tanned leather versus, let's say, a combination tanned hot stuff chrome or veg tanned leather. It's incremental for people who maybe are not familiar. They haven't had a few pair. They may not see a big difference from the get-go and everything else. But I mean, for the tannery, I mean, it's night and day. I mean, some of them are chrome tanning stuff in 7 days. Others take 3 months. A Shell Cordovan can take 6 months. From a business standpoint, one's like printing money. One's a total nightmare.
I mean, you brought up the idea of like things are taking longer. And sometimes you're a little bit happy about that, even though it's a nightmare. Like, how do you see, everything takes forever now from the tannery on up in terms of the potentially good side, which is, wow, maybe that means there's like a lot of demand, right? And I think you see that in like lead times, especially for custom stuff, or if you're kind of familiar with how a shop might order a boot from a manufacturer, or the way that brand that you maybe work for, with, et cetera, might operate, versus like, oh shit, this is all taking forever. And when does worry start to creep in, especially when footwear, from like a tannery perspective specifically, you know, outsoles aren't being used for cars terribly often, I imagine, but leather is, even if it's not the exact same leather, it's cycles that are kind of being eaten up by these other industries. When does that oh shit moment start to hit? And have you gotten more or less worried in the last, let's say, 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, I mean, for us, though, it's a little different just because we've had the luxury of being small, right? And so, I mean, you know, but all of a sudden, as things compound, that's where you think of these bigger companies that are doing hundreds of thousands of pairs and things. I mean, one large delay kind of turns into something else. And I mean, it's a big problem, you know? So, I mean, for us, it's becoming a little more serious as far as when you miss something by a 4-week window or 8-week window, or I mean, honestly, three months or something. I mean, it becomes a little more serious, but just like anything else, just kind of a risk that, you know, maybe you can hedge that a little bit by being a little more conservative, be a little more cautious. And if things work out great, then hey, maybe you don't have as much inventory as you quite needed. But in the last 3 years, it's like, hey, maybe conservative is okay. You know, like, and it's tough. I mean, we've seen brands that they make good shoes in the last 10 years, a couple of them, I got off the top of my head, that like, are not making shoes anymore, you know what I mean? They were never big companies and stuff, but similar to something we do. And it's just because it's difficult, you know, it's just the inventory thing. You're storing a physical product and having to sell it, and then you have returns. And so, even more importantly, bigger brands that have made great shoes in the past, they're like, yeah, I mean, let's move towards something a little more casual and do more volume and have a little less headache. And we can work with leathers that are a little more predictable. And
but they're never coming back from that. Could be a little. They're never coming back from that. Once you,
and they might be okay with that.
Yeah, like, but you they know, are. But they you know, okay, that's that. Like I was talking earlier today with Ryan, our producer. Shout out, Ryan! You're the greatest. You take whatever number it is. It could be 10,000. It could be 50,000. It could be 5,000. It could be 200,000. And as soon as the brand that makes X incredibly high quality product says, we're going to start cheap out a little bit. You know, let's say we just figured out how to save $5 a pair and you multiply that by a million that we're selling. We just save $5 million. Like, oh shit, what if we could save like 20, you know, like what if we, maybe we could sell them for even more because we're marketing it differently or we're in a different category. Like that is a drug that is impossible to get unaddicted to. And then they're gone. Like you don't come back from that. I don't think in the last 2 decades there's ever been a brand that's like, ah, well, we'll make something cheaper and we'll like make ourselves more money and like, but actually we think we're gonna go back to this like other more expensive strategy that like probably requires a whole lot more marketing on top of it too to help people understand why these shoes are quality and more expensive. And like that brand is gone. It's like it's off the map. It still exists. It's a bit of a ghost ship from our perspective. That's it. I really think that it takes somebody like, I say this with the utmost respect and love, Wyatt, with a whole bunch of fucking screws loose to want to do it the good way and the real way. And like, God bless everybody who's doing it. And every time that like a person, it seems like it's often driven by a person or a family or whatever it might be. If that person leaves the company, changes hands, it's like lights out because there's so much savings to be had. A different market to address in a lot of instances that's much larger. And it's like, oh, man, yeah, okay. That's the thing that worries me most, like, overall about the industry, because it's not easy to replace. Name any number of pairs from a new brand. It could be 500. A new Goodyear Well brand selling 500 pairs in its first year would be, like, a success, right? Yeah, that's, you know, the supply problems and just manufacturing issues and all that. Like, that's what worries me long term. And how do you counter it? Well, you get people that care. You get people to want these products. And so then somebody's going to make them. Somebody with a couple screws loose, God bless them. But yeah, and the harder that gets, you get a little more nervous about it.
You almost have to give these brands a pass in the footwear industry. Like, you know, the old shoe dogs, you know, they wouldn't even say like Allen Edmonds. I mean, they're looking at Cole Haan. It was a great shoe, whatever. And you almost have to give them a pass because of the actual business perspective of footwear. It's actually just a terrible, terrible base to begin with because of SKUs and variants due to sizing. You know, what other product are you producing that might start with 13 to 15 variants? And then if you add widths, which are common in certain price points, can turn into 42 with just 3 widths. Mind you, we get B, hey, you're going to do C and B with like every week. And it's like, then you turn into like 100 variants for one product. And it's like, so I think footwear is just one of those difficult places because, you know, even jackets and things, it's usually half that, you know, even if you're carrying a pretty large spread. So it's like, it's just a very strange place. And I think that's why you end up with very few companies that do it long-term because they're not evil or anything like that. They're just like, we got to continue on. We can't like lose money. We can't. And they just end up going down this path. Yeah, it's a business. And it just turns into that. I mean, and honestly, that's why Alden has been, I mean, that's why they're a standout for what they've done. They have that panache to them as far as like, it is what it is. Take it or leave it. Some people say they're overpriced or whatever. And I say that in the sense of like, hey, you can buy other Goodyear welts for $300, $500, $600 or even $800, but they're cleaner or whatever. But it's like, regardless of the brand, whether it's Alden or Edward Green, they've been doing this for a long time and they haven't really wavered. Just from my standpoint, there's nothing to fault there because they're the only ones still doing it. Like, you know, they're the only ones really still doing it from that long ago. You know, we're kind of new to the whole game and everything. And so still figuring things out. It's like that whole perspective, it's very, very different. And I mean, not even Alden. I think, look at, Carmina, the stuff that they come out with. I know it's not as popular in the States and things like that because of the last shapes and the widths and all that stuff. But what they're producing year over year, consistently, the products they're making, I mean, it's exceptional, right? Just amazing stuff. Meerman, same thing. And it's like, just keep doing it.
Meerman's a pretty good example. I mean, both of them, I guess, are pretty good examples of like younger brands that are doing some real volume. It's also shoemaking lineage all the way back that eventually ends up with the same person for both of those brands, you know? And that's it. Like, it's either lineage and family or just the next wacky person that is essentially making a poor business decision in some way to create something that they personally care about. You know what it takes to do that? Somebody who cares about them personally in like their day-to-day life and then, you know, eventually says, huh, maybe I should like do this with myself. You know, the replacement on like a great brand lost to time, you know, a lot of which for the US brands happened like kind of started in like the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And then it's like, okay, well, these are different shoes now that are effective businesses and isn't that great, but a lot of special things were lost along the way. You just can't get it right back. Like, it doesn't work like that. Something just doesn't pop up and it's like, oh yeah, yeah, here's another 100,000 pairs of like incredible American Goodyear welted shoes, especially the way things are right now. But like, that's just not how it works ever.
So like, Tito, how often do you go to New York City?
Yeah, I'm there, you know, at least a couple times a month.
How weird would it be if LaFoe didn't exist anymore?
Yeah, I don't know if I would even be sitting here doing this podcast if LaFoe didn't exist, right? Yeah, it would be crazy.
Think about like Epelot, LaFoe, which Epelot has since left in the West Coast, right? But it's like, that's one shop. LaFoe's one shop. Steven is one guy just holding it down with a handful of really, I mean, magnificent brands that make very unique footwear, bringing it to New York City. And so sometimes we joke around about that. Like, we're like, hey, let's go to a shoe shop, like, trip. And it's like, New York, literally, you're just going to go to LaFoe.
Let's go to Steven. Let's go to Blind Tiger. Let's get some beers because let's wrap it up.
Right. Maybe hit Crockett and Jones real quick, you know, like, but we've seen the Marlowe a couple times, you know? So it's like, where else do you go? And it's so tough. Forget the brands, these shops, which, you know, I can't say anything because, you know, we don't sell shops, but Standard and Strange. Thank you, Neil. Neil carries some. But it's like Standard and Strange, these guys who end up having these establishments, having these shops in New York City. I mean, it makes all the difference in the world, and it's literally a handful of businesses. And LaFoe, just, and that just first thing that comes to mind, it's like, how many of those are there in this country? You know, you think of these shops like that, that really do that. And of course, there's a lot of these shops that carry Goodyear Welt, but it's like, from where I live, I mean, you got to drive a long time to get there. Dashing Chicago opened up in Chicago. That's really cool. It was cool to see some like Alden, Edward Greens come in to Chicago after some years of not having really not much at all. You know, it's like, obviously Oak Street's there, but just maybe one shop, they're one shop. So it's like, it's really, really tough. You know, it's tough. You don't have to look any further than that, you know?
Yeah, it's nuts, man. Like, you know, I live out in the suburbs. I live near like Princeton, New Jersey, right? Which is like kind of a rich person town. There's a, you know, the university, you know, it's like, you know, the seat of Ivy style, right? You would think you'd be able to go and like pick up some really nice shoes there, and just like doesn't exist. You know, I've thought about it. I'm like, you know, I love working at a shoe store. I love selling people shoes. It's like, I probably wouldn't open a store in Princeton just because I'm not really a Princeton guy. I live in a small town near it. And I'm like, what would it take to like make it even work here? How would that even work? And I'm like, it's basically impossible. You know, it's like, yeah, you're basically selling stuff online and doing a showroom, right? And, you know, I could just do that out of my garage, I guess, right? Like, I don't know. I look at what, you know, what Jason did at Division Road. That is giving me some inspiration of like, what if I, you know, what if I just like bought a nice piece of land and, you know, had like a showroom there and just made it like a destination, right? But then you need people to be like so into this stuff that they're like coming out for it, right? And it's not just, oh, here's all the people from the town coming here to get their shoes, right? Like, if you watch like an old timey movie or whatever, and it's like, oh yeah, everybody just, there's the shoe store in town, right? And every little town has a shoe store, and there's some guy there who helps everybody get shoes that fit, and he loves shoes, and it's great. And the shoes are probably really well made, and, you know, probably made in the USA, and, you know, or made locally wherever it is. And it's like, anything that I could sell here would be made at least a couple hundred miles away if I could convince Alden to let me sell out of my barn or whatever. Or it's going to come from all the way across the world, you know, and It's like all the kind of bonds that bring a community together have just been totally fractured, I feel like. And you're just kind of left wondering, like, where do shoes fit into all that? I think it's all taken into the internet, right? Like, that's where the community of people that are into this is kind of congregating and, you know, sharing information and communicating with each other. It's not here. It's not here. Most people in the community where I live have no idea what any of this stuff is.
Turns out the epicenter of high quality footwear is not in rural New Jersey.
It turns out that's true. Yeah.
Huh. Some high quality shoes. I mean, dude, Sean, he ran the LeFou store in Chicago and it didn't work. And he's like, fuck it. I'm going to open up my own store. I love it. And I think that, you know, it could be done a little differently. And maybe people don't want St. Crispin's or, you know, whatever. And let's keep a focus here. And like, let's try. Like, the whole idea is that, like, people are trying. It's this incredible conundrum, right? Like, demand, especially for bootier stuff, more rugged stuff, all time high. Like, you look at any of these brands, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, of course, there's a reason why it takes forever, like months to over a year to get stuff from Alden, from White's, from Wesco, whatever. That's demand. Yes, some of it is labor. Some of it is materials. But in no world is demand not a huge part of that. Yeah, the local aspect of it, you know, the person who sells everybody, including your kids, their shoes is gone. And everybody go listen to the Jim McFarland episode from a couple seasons ago, I guess. You know, one of the most important episodes that we've had in terms of cobblers. How does this all look? And it's all individual small businesses that are affected by the headwinds of all of this, but have to make their own personal decisions as people. Here we are. Luckily, there is this like thriving and growing internet community, like writ large, you know, the little one that we have, but just in general for well-made, beautiful stuff, you know. And how do we get that to catch without just like all becoming cowboys? I don't know.
And that could be the one small downside of the uproar with boots and kind of that turn towards casual versus dress shoes. Okay, let's think of like, what did the Zabakas in Norwalk, Connecticut sell? A lot of guys who are going to the city and they're wearing a lot of Oxfords, they're wearing a lot of Chukkas, they're wearing a lot of plain-toe bluchers or maybe even some saddle shoes, things like that. When that stuff goes away a little bit, I do think there's a little bit of that was a tool at some point, especially like a cap-toe Oxford. It was a tool for a lot of people as in you wore it to work, it was part of your uniform. It was uniform and you had to resole it and stuff like that because you may not even really cared for the style or the brand or whatever. You're like, this is my uniform. I wear it and I resole it, whatever, take care of it. Where that could be the one little downside of like the trend of kind of moving towards boots and things like that, where people are just kind of buying something because it looks cool. Where in the past,
we need more mandates. I think you're right, Wyatt. We need mandates, governmental mandates.
You know where I'm going with this? It's like, it's a little bit like, I think, and that's okay, but it won't be the way it was. I mean, you mentioned cobblers, and that's where it sparked this. Is like, it'll never go back to that unless people are dressing up. I mean, you know, unless you're wearing an Oxford and you're going to work in that and you're beating them up and you have 3-4 pair you're rotating, depending on what color suit or whatever you're wearing to work, they're not reselling them, you know? And I mean, how many people are buying shoes between, you know, boots between, you know, $4,000 and $9,000 are reselling them? I mean, I think, you know, but it's not a lot of them, you know? If anything, they're putting them on eBay and stuff, whatever. So it's like, there's a little difference there where it's like, wearing them and getting use out of them and reselling them and stuff like that. It's a little different from what it used to be, where it was kind of like part of your everyday, you know, get up.
All right. Hey, we got to cut this thing off at some point. Let's end this on a positive note. What do you got?
That was a question.
Either of you. I see all of this as positive. Any discussion around this, like how do we care? How do we care, you know, differently, better? How do we get more people to care? All of that's positive. But who's got something just glowing?
I would say one thing people don't think about a lot, but if you're drinking a light beer, specifically like a Modelo, okay, a Mexican beer, you should, opinion, have tequila with it. And you just kind of go back and forth. It's probably the best experience you've ever had. And on top of that, you know, maybe wear some loafers.
I like how you're starting with the beer and the tequila is the addition, not the other way around.
Yeah.
It's a beer with the tequila back.
100%.
Yeah. And like, yeah, pop some tassel loafers on and like, guess what? That's the lifestyle. That is the lifestyle. Tequila, Modelo, tassels. Take pictures of them. Talk about them with somebody on the internet. And guess what? You do all those things, yeah, without overdoing any of them, you're probably going to be a happier person. Like, you probably are. You just did a bunch of things that you cared about.
Well, that's the great thing about Mexico. You know, you can sit outside, even a hotel. You can still smoke a cigar outside, drink beer, tequila. You know, just kind of hang out. No big deal.
Are you in Mexico right now?
I wish. I wish.
All right. Look, this is the shortest episode we've ever put out. Huge thanks to Taft for sponsoring this episode. Go to taftclothing.com. Check out their new stitch-down construction line. These Chelseas really are pretty good. Give them a look. If you even mildly enjoy the ShoeCast, I promise you will adore the Stitchdown Discord. And your Stitchdown Premium membership seriously does so much to support the ShoeCast and all Stitchdown operations. Give it a think and get more info on the Discord on stitchdown.com. Most of all, Wyatt Gilmore of Grant Stone. Boots and shoes. This was great. We did some serious exploration here. I feel like we peered deep into our own souls and the soul of the industry. But thank you. And yeah, you did a good job. You got buzzed like 4 to 6 times. That's not bad.
It's the more important stuff, right? It's the more important things, talking about kind of everything else that gets lost in it. I mean, these are good topics.
Glad to hear it. That's it for this week. Take care of your shoes. We'll see you next time.